welcome back to another episode of the Geek Whisperers. I'm Amy Lewis.
And I'm John Mark Troyer.
And I'm Matt Brender.
And we are ready to stir up some serious trouble this week because we have a very, very special guest on. And I'm happy to say it is my own personal snuffleupagus. We very rarely appear in public together, but I love talking to her. So, Sarah, tell us about yourself.
Thank you, Amy. My own personal snuffleupagus. I am Sarah Vella, and I am happily and currently employed at Dell, working as a social media professional. I really am a servers and converged infrastructure focused person, but I also kind of manage our overall enterprise technology social media strategy.
Awesome. And of course, one third of Speaking in Tech, the another podcast.
Yeah, that too.
You know, when you're scared.
Well, hey, so Sarah, does your management know you do that? Do they like that? Do they dislike that? It's a great podcast, by the way.
Luckily for me, they know I do it. They're aware that it's somehow possibly a popular thing, and I think also they never listen. So I'm championed for doing it, and also they're blissfully unaware of exactly what goes on.
That is absolutely
and I aim to keep it that way.
I go back and forth between wanting to share the links in particular weeks and praying that nobody ever listens.
I feel like I've kind of gotten to the point at Dell where, you know, not to sound too cocky, but they like me and appreciate what I do, and it certainly there's no one on this earth who can do no wrong. But I'm kind of in a safe place where they understand that part of my deal is that I'm irreverent, and that's my personality and that's my persona online, and they just let me kind of roll with it. So I have a little bit of free rein, which I appreciate. And I try to be careful about at least not totally disparaging my own company, if not our partners.
Advice for all the unicorns out there.
And it leads us nicely into what we're going to be talking about tonight, sort of the risks and reward, if you will, of going on record. And Sarah, you were telling us a little bit about how you have really taken a stand about treating influencers like press. And saying no longer do you have to be the second class citizen or the people shoved aside. Talk to me about that. That is you're preaching to the choir here. So whisper loud.
Yeah. And I truly don't want to take all the credit for this. I definitely stand on the shoulders of the folks from the storage side of the Dell business who really built up a great social media team before I even got to Dell. And they worked hard to reach out to and create an embracing atmosphere for influencers online, for bloggers online to interact with them and to understand what was going on with Dell in the storage space. So I leaned heavily on their tradition and on their work and have worked to continue it throughout all of the enterprise space and to build that group of bloggers and influencers that we reach out to now when we have events and when we have announcements. But I guess, not to get too org charty on you guys, but I've moved from living in the product group side of things to officially moving into a role in the communications organization at Dell. And that's been really great because I've been able to work even more closely than before with my PR and AR counterparts so that we can build a kind of cohesive strategy. And that's also really given me the opportunity to say, hey, let's make sure that we treat these folks who are writing about enterprise technology online, not for major news outlets or enterprise technology kind of media outlets, but still with extreme influence and with great followings. Let's really work on reaching out to them and treating them equally and treating them like full partners the way that we do the press. And I think we've made a good, sorry, but I think we've made a lot of progress with that over the last couple of years. So I'm really pleased.
Okay. Well, you said it's like the duck comes down. When you say org chart, I have to hop in there. today's quote was abstract the org chart. But my question for you is, did just you go over? Did all of social media go over? Are you a one-off operation with this? Can you tell us a little more about how that's structured to support that kind of operation?
Yeah, we actually enjoy the org chart talk, so you don't have to shy away from it.
Sure. So, you know, Dell, along with a lot of other things that went on over the last year, obviously with the going private and everything else, there's been a lot of reorganization within Dell, a lot of it for the better, a lot of streamlining and a very careful look at, you know, one of the things that happened within Dell was they looked at the way in which the product groups were siloed into server storage, networking, and converged and said, hey, you know, let's really, because we're trying to tell the story of, you know, end-to-end solutions provider, IT solutions provider, let's pull everybody together under one roof and make sure that everybody's talking to each other. So that's one thing that happened. But in the course of all of that going on, those of us that were located as social media personnel within those separate silos all got pulled out of the product group and moved into the communications organization so that we could kind of be together within that strategy group and then have that dotted line to ESG, to Enterprise Solutions Group. There's also some other stuff going on. We have somebody from my team has moved into a marketing rotation program, which is really great. So we're looking to backfill her. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge. If you're interested in a social media position at Dell, please call me.
Shameless plug.
That's the first time I think we've ever had a job pitch here.
Nice.
So right now I'm a very lonely team of one, but not for long. We should be up to about a 2.5 head social media team covering all of enterprise solutions soon. So that's why I say, you know, servers, conversion infrastructure, that's my kind of primary focus. There will be somebody coming on who will be solely focused on storage and networking. And then together, you know, the two of us plus about a half-time person to help with operational stuff. We'll run that team.
Sure. John, go
ahead. When you say you're in charge of social media, do you in charge of the channels, in charge of creating the content, packaging the content, what kind of all the channels, blogging? What do you guys mean when you say, you know, social media for servers and storage?
That's a great question. So you know, and I have to also make sure that you understand that, you know, it's a huge company. We have a lot of channels, and there are some efforts coming out of the marketing organization on some of our larger enterprise channels that I don't even touch. You know, we're connected with each other. We know what's going on. But, you know, within my team, we run the four Twitter handles that correspond to those four different groups that I mentioned earlier: server, storage, networking, converged. We also manage the Dell for Enterprise blog, which is the enterprise technology focused blog on Dell.com. I manage the YouTube Dell Large Enterprise channel. And there's a storage Facebook page and then Enterprise Forum Facebook page. So those are the channels. As far as strategy goes, our focus is really on product launches and announcements and events. And we leave a lot of that kind of sustaining momentum stuff to the marketing teams around campaigns. But I'm very closely connected with the product teams and with the launch teams around what's coming out, what's new, and making sure that we have the right content to support it. And then I'm also really tied in with the, you know, executive level stuff that's going on so that we can make sure that our executives are being represented in social media, in blogs, with thought leadership pieces, and with kind of the Dell point of view around not just where we are, but where we're going.
But you're separate from Dell Tech Center, and you're separate from TechPageOne.
Yep.
Interesting.
We all talk to each other, but we're separate.
Well, I mean, that's I'm jealous. I'm interested. Can we talk about org charts more?
Sure.
I hope people don't mind.
Yeah.
I'm part of corporate marketing. I'm a sister organization to our ARPR. I'm a little teed off at them because they call themselves influencer marketing now, but they really just mean AR and PR. I've had to start using the word community influencer to tell people who I work with. But one of the interesting things that so that's that I think is interesting. One of the challenges of being separate from the business unit, I've found, as being a content externally facing person in a group that's primarily concerned with taking care of platforms and channels, is that the business unit doesn't always tell me what they're doing because I'm in a separate org. So I'll find I kind of refer to it as running around trying to catch the elephant's poop. They'll just do stuff and not warn me, and I'll have I'll follow along. Do you fear now that you're in a separate organization that you will also have to be a poop catcher?
I feel like one of my strengths, and I think Amy and I kind of share this actually from what I've heard her talk about on other podcasts, is I'm a poop seeker.
A dung beetle, if we will.
That's what works for me.
I'm glad to share this characteristic with you, and I can't wait to find out more.
I'm really proactive about going out and connecting with people across the organization, across the business units, Pandel, CrossLaw, whatever term you want to use, to not just communicate out what I'm doing, but to find out what they're doing and see where we can sync up and see where it doesn't make sense or it does make sense in terms of calendar and strategy. I've been doing that for 3 years at Dell, and there's no end in sight. And there's obviously always going to be frustrations and missed opportunities. But I'm extremely well connected and integrated into all kinds of teams at Dell. And that was something that I was taught very early on by my very first manager at Dell to start doing. And I never stopped doing it. And it's one of my strengths is connecting with and communicating with people. Having said that, though, it's a huge organization. We have 100-something thousand people at Dell. It's never going to be perfect, and it's never going to be highly organized. Another thing that really works for me, interestingly enough, is that when I moved positions or moved teams, I didn't move cubes. And so I still sit in the building where the engineers sit, where, the product marketing team sit, where the outbound marketing team sit. And so I see those people. I don't go to work every single day. I work from home a lot, but I see those people a lot. And that FaceTime really helps me stay connected to what's going on and helps them remember that I'm there to support them and to make sure that they're communicating out, strategically.
Yeah, you can't undervalue the face-to-face contact in even the largest of organizations.
Based on the organizational structure and digging back into having those influencers, and I love that we are definitely seeing a rampant trend of everybody wants to call, everything an influencer, which I think is hilarious. I'm like, look, PR, AR, IR, you've had acronyms for a long time. Back off.
Those are ours.
Those are ours. Give us something. What have you found in terms of some of the pros and cons of working with your press team, working with PR around these influencers? Is it a good fit? Do you share nicely? Learning curve? Give us some of the practical feedback there.
Yeah,
that side told us everything. We can move on.
Well, the sigh was because I think there's always, well, I don't know about always, I hate to make predictions. Right now, there's a kind of hierarchy. And I don't know even that it's a bad thing that there's a hierarchy. There's always going to be more visibility with a piece in the Wall Street Journal than there is with a blog on my very best and most highly read influencers website, right? So there's kind of the sense that press and the PR folks kind of set the direction, and then social media follows underneath it, for better or worse. And I'm happy to play that role, that supporting role, and happy to kind of bring my community along into that. But I think, you know, there's a lot of evolution there, Amy, and it's really hard to, it's really hard to answer that question without kind of thinking ahead about how is that going to shift as we move farther and farther away from traditional media. I'm still learning and still trying to figure that out, honestly.
I want to jump Matt into that one because it triggered my the metrics.
How did you read my mind? Because I was immediately when you said, "Well, you're happy to play the supporting role with, you know, if you're going to make a tiering system, the second or third tier influencers, because the Wall Street Journal will always trump you." The immediate thing that came to mind was, "Well, it depends on how you measure that influence. What does it mean to measure influence? And is there more of an implicit sort of measurement right now that there's a list of, you know, bona fide sources on the internet, like the Wall Street Journal, that will automatically be ranked higher regardless of what sort of, I don't even care if we go with really bad metrics like page views, let alone engagement, or is there actually something kind of richer, deeper that you're doing a case-by-case comparison to see if your message is resonating?
Yeah, you know, that's
Sarah, and also it may also be completely not in your world. It's one of those things where, like, that is decided at a level and you're playing in the kind of pool that you're at, which isn't a bad pool.
Well, I don't want to give the impression that we all sit around talking about, you know, PR goes first because they have the Wall Street Journal contact, and I come second because, you know, I have the blogger contact. It's not that broken down into tiers necessarily. I feel, part of this also is the fact that my PR counterparts are tuned into things that I am less aware of. I'm not trained in news cycles. I'm not trained in kind of studying the marketplace and reacting to trends and being aware of necessarily what other vendors are up to and how to either, you know, disrupt or complement news cycles. There's a whole kind of layer of work that my teammates do that's frankly that I'm not trained to do. I'm learning about it because I'm watching them do their work, but they've got a different focus. And I'm kind of, you know, I feel like, and when I say like, I'm happy to follow along and support that and compliment it, I really mean it. I am happy to do all of those things. And I also think that the work that I do is important. And I also agree with you that to just measure based on, you know, eyeballs, page views, is ridiculous. So there's more at stake there, and there's more to measure. But you're never going to get a pure, beautiful metric analysis of what I do versus what they do versus what AR does, and put it all together and figure out, you know, what's worth more or who follows whom. I mean, it's just impossible.
No, you can't, and it doesn't stop me from fantasizing every single day that we might be able to find decent metrics that, you know, measure brand influence as a function of different properties on the internet and the people that they attract, and basically the conduits like us, like the unicorn herders that connect the dots with other people, and, you know, kind of weight that in a value system that shows that in some cases, yeah, you should spend more money on X, and sometimes you should spend more money on Y. But
The budget stuff is indeed, that's probably the place to have the metrics discussion of how the budget gets divided. But Matt, I mean, if you talk to your PR counterparts, and in fact, we've really only talked to one, I guess, official PR person here on this podcast. But if you talk to PR folks, right, they'll tell you that their metrics are all about as challenging as ours, in some cases worse, right? Because they're measuring, you know, number of clippings, and they have kind of impact scores for different journals. And they all know that those people lie about circulation all the time. And so, I mean, they struggle with metrics as well on the PR side. But our PR folks are brilliant, I think, in fact, and they do worry about a lot of stuff that I don't worry about, like
the company story and, you know, the arc of the story that we're telling this year and things like that. I'm much more tactically focused on, you know, what did we announce today about a certain about a product X and patch level Y and things like that. And what do bloggers want to hear about that? So I think it's very, in that sense, I see them as pretty complimentary. And I think I see where Sarah's coming from here.
Yeah. And I'm going to land in total and violent agreement with all of us that they're really, we've said it dozens of times here. It's not an either or with PR versus the blogging and community driven influence. It's really, an question, but it gets divisive when you start talking about influence and budgets, which we haven't hit on very hard. Yeah. I would love to get somebody in the finance world on this podcast at some point and talk about that, because I think it really affects the way you can execute on community when it is an in-person and face-to-face medium.
To jump in there and sort of take it back full circle, I think some of it is not just budget resource. When we talk about sort of what Sarah's talking about in terms of giving equal treatment, yes, there are budget concerns, but there are also just physical resource constraints. If you're talking about the day of launch, you're talking about a number of seats in the front. Yeah, in all seriousness, you're talking about certain finite resources that are inherent to this type of event activity launch.
Yeah.
And Sarah, I'm sort of curious, what are the things that you've done to, is it truly equal footing, do you think? Are you there yet? Or is it a little bit, well, if PR comes, then a blogger gets bumped?
So that's a great question, Amy. And I think actually what we've done is realize that bloggers don't necessarily want to be treated exactly like press. And in fact, in some cases, that makes them uncomfortable. So, you know, whereas with press, you know, we set up a lot of one-on-one briefings. With bloggers, we have roundtables so that they can be in a small, you know, an intimate group setting with executives. But it's a little bit less of the pressure of a one-on-one interaction that the press are used to, but bloggers aren't as familiar with or comfortable with, in our experience. I don't think that we have seating assignments, so it's not so much about front row, second row, third row. At our events, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's true. We want to give them a lot of access to executives, but in a way that they're comfortable.
We found that makes a huge difference. So I think that what you're doing is great. The kind of blogger briefings in a group works for bloggers better. They're not really there for an exclusive.
Yeah, that's such good insight. I think that people, I mean, there are moments where that kind of one-on-one is appropriate, but it's so interesting. And I think that's so well spoken that for people who that's not their daily job, that being with their peers is actually more comfortable. That's more fulfilling.
Yeah, and I was going to highlight that it's interesting to note that equal time for equal influence doesn't mean the exact same delivery mechanism, that people consume it in different fashions. And also, I really like how you hit, Sarah, on the training aspect of this, that just people have different expectations when they're participating in the sort of demand gen Twitter blogger world for fun, as opposed to people that are doing it professionally, also possibly for fun, but are trained to deliver and expect certain things.
Yep.
Well, that leads me to another question, just because on that idea of separate, but somewhat equal information, but separate presentation layer. Do you find that you get the same people to brief the press, the analysts, the IR folks, as you do the influencers, the bloggers?
You mean from the executive level at Dell?
Exactly. Do you find that, you know, executive X is comfortable in all those audience, or do you find that, you know, use X for one and Y for the other, or what's been your experience there?
Honestly, we, you know, again, I'm going to sound like a Dell shill, but I'm our the executive group at Dell that represents the Enterprise Solutions Group anyway are very, very comfortable and very personable and understand how to interact with press equally as they do with bloggers and influencers. I'm really impressed by that, and they're very good at putting folks at ease right away. So we don't really need to manage that. We can put the same folks with press as we do with bloggers, and it goes perfectly well.
I think that's interesting, Sarah, and it's a different tactic than one I've used. I'm kind of jealous, in fact. I normally don't put executives in with the bloggers. I tend to use technical marketing. I don't put product marketing ever, because I do, but I do only if they have a buddy who can pick them up when they fall down. I use a lot of technical marketing and senior, you know, SE architect types. And I think I might be missing the boat. I think I probably should have been bringing in more executives all this time. But well, but I find that technical marketing really works well with them.
We've got a few executives that have taken that on. And I'm sort of listening to, with open ears, because I think there's an opportunity for practitioners, for those of us who do what Sarah does, to, if you don't have those executives, you know, maybe there's a training program. Maybe there's an opportunity to sort of do a dry run and see who might, you know, if they're used to the press, try them out with the blogger audience and help them kind of discover some of those differences. It might be something that they really, we found the right match, that it really energizes that executive, because it is so different. These are, you know, very usually more technical, very engaged, and the questions are different. And our more technical executives find that pretty invigorating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I mean, it can be challenging, and of course, there's layers of influencers and bloggers, right? So, John, you mentioned earlier Dell Tech Center, and so that's there's a whole community behind Dell Tech Center, and they get access to a lot of the Dell, you know, technical product marketers and those kinds of folks in NDA calls. And
those are two very different briefings. They're different. Different goals, different topics, even probably.
Yep. But for the folks, the 40 or so folks that I consider to be in my influencer group, they're comfortable in the room with an executive, and the executives that I have at my disposal are comfortable in the room with the bloggers, and it seems to work really well. And I would encourage you actually to see if you can get your executives to talk more to your bloggers, because I really think that the bloggers appreciate having that access and being able to learn a little bit more about not just about the technical deep dive, but some of the strategy behind what's going on at these organizations.
I have to say, in a recent turn of events, again thinking about time pressures, etc., you know, there was a competition for resources, and I had an outburst that bloggers are people too. And it can be difficult in a time where you need to brief a bunch of people in a short window, to figure out the resource. So I encourage people to take that stand. You know, that it is worth the time to sort it out, and admire people who are doing that programmatically.
We've seen it as hugely valuable. Before we started briefing bloggers years back, we would get, you know, a few notices on launch day, right? Well, because what can you do, right? The launch comes out, you haven't told anybody about it. So what can people do? They can point to the product page, or they can point to the release notes. That's what we used to get. And we actually run two different styles of blogger briefings. One is very technical and involves, you know, 2 or 4 or 6 or 10 hours of technical briefings with the team and beta access. And then we also have betas. And then there's another one that's just more of a briefing. But you get much... You get actual real blog posts, right? Because you give, I mean, you know, you give people several days to digest it and write something decent. So your coverage looks a lot better on launch day when you are able to brief people.
Yeah, and John, I learned this from you, but with EMC Elect, it was really about getting those people not just enough information so they can digest it a little, but also the right information. That again, realizing that not all audiences are identical, while a overview deck might be great if you're going to write a high level explanation of what a product launch is about, some of these people, they want to know the data path of the new storage system and the exact number of, you know, fiber channel ports and all these like little idiosyncrasies that, I don't know, I would say that 95% of the press, just making numbers up on the spot like you're allowed to, just wouldn't care about that level of detail. But these are the people that really care, so they don't just add to the amplification on day one launches, but they also influence an audience that was previously totally uninterested.
That's exactly right. And you know, I've also fought really hard to make sure that if we're creating a thumb drive for press, that includes product photos and you know, spec sheets and whatever else are around product launches, that same thumb drive goes out to all the bloggers that are going to be in attendance. You know, that we make sure that they get all the information that they need in order to write those blogs and create that content.
One mistake that I have heard about is giving an internal sales deck to bloggers or influencers. So one that you would give to the partners, which has like selling propositions and internal logic about the way things work. And I've heard of that happening, and the external bloggers going, you know, wait a minute, you know, are we not people? You know, are we not, you're giving us the information as if we were part of your company, and we're not.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. There's
so,
a fine line.
You gotta watch that too.
There's a really fine line between treating people, as trusted advisors or even kind of part of the family. You really want to bring people into your circle of influence at that company so they feel attached to you and they want to care. That said, they also don't want to drink any of the Kool-Aid that some people are paid to drink. So you really need a sanitation layer in there. If your documentation is being used by multiple sources, I think it's really important for people like Sarah to be that reality check before that goes out the door.
Well, right, and what's interesting about that too, Matt, that I just thought of is that, you know, all influencers don't have the same standing, right? We have plenty of influencers in our, you know, what we call our influencer community who are also Dell customers and Dell users, and so that's very different from, you know, the press that you know, is purportedly neutral. We have this group of folks who are, some of them, very, you know, very kind of loyal Dell fans and Dell customers, as well as being influential enterprise bloggers. And so they might have access to some of that customer stuff that you're referring to that the other bloggers might not see. And so how do you manage that? You know, and I'm sure that all of you have experienced that or sort of tried to figure that out.
Yeah,
but that's an issue that comes up for us for sure.
Know thy audience, the first rule of any of this stuff. That you have a lot of audiences, even as you get down to the granularity of, you know, quote unquote just bloggers, and you need to manage those relationships and have the teamwork inside the organization to do so well.
Hey Sarah, since we mentioned the word influencer several times here, we were having a discussion on Twitter the other day about influencer versus advocate versus, I don't know, ambassador versus, I don't know what other words we came up with. Do you see a sensitivity there from outside in? So in other words, are some people worried about being called an advocate versus an influencer? Because an advocate, again, implies that they're kind of a fan, they're kind of on the team, and not everybody feels that way. Do you have to be careful with how you talk to people either internally or externally?
Yeah, I definitely don't use the term advocate externally or even internally, because I think that does imply a kind of bias that I'm trying to shy away from.
Right. Do people come up to you and say, why can't you make them do stuff? Dance. Make them dance. Yeah,
they don't actually. Dance, I mean, unicorn. I think there's some respect for the fact that you know, we want to treat, and that there's attention there, of course, always. And if somebody comes to one of our events and tweets negatively during a keynote, I'll hear about it for sure, and there will be pushback.
No,
and that's
your fault.
Happened.
Yeah.
Well, you know, or like, you know, should we invite that person back? Like that kind of stuff goes on, and I'm sure it happens at every event. This is not just a Dell thing, but you know, you have to kind of remind people these are folks with their own brains and with their own Twitter accounts, and they get to speak freely. You know, just because we invited them doesn't mean that they have to drink the Kool-Aid, as you say. So advocate is not a word I would ever use. Influencer doesn't really resonate outside of, you know, outside of internal use. Like I would never, you know, send an email to one of my influencers and say, hey, influencer, you know, it's a blogger maybe, or, you know, social media community member. Like I don't really have an external term that I use for everybody to say you're part of this community. Dell Tech Center has their Rockstar community, and they've named it Rockstar, branded it that way. And those are folks who are, you know, very active on the community forums and in the blogs, but we don't have a word.
The lack of a proper noun has been challenging. I mean, I have tended toward influencer, and when I'm more tongue-in-cheek, I say unicorn. And I really have, I mean, we've all laughed about that, but it is... you know, you can sort of talk about your ambition to be a unicorn without being completely immodest, I think, because it's sort of a constant journey, you know what I mean, as opposed to maybe a steady state.
But Amy, unicorns don't exist. You should use a word for something that does exist, like Sasquatch or something.
I'm going to start calling people Nessie.
Well, and sort of the flip side, yes, there is the problem where people are like, can't you make the unicorns prance? But what about if you have close alliance with a PR team? Have you found that there's any influencer poaching, where they're not only trying to come to you to get the unicorns to prance, but going around you? Have you had any issues structurally with that? Is there any issue the delineation?
No one would dare go around me, Amy.
Well, I certainly wouldn't.
they know better. No, and you know, in all seriousness, that's not an issue. It's never been a problem. And I think there's very open, you know, we are aware of ownership of relationships at Dell and respectful of that. And there's a couple people that overlap. You know, the tech center rock star and the ESG influencer community, or the analyst and the ESG influencer community. And I'm always very careful to say, hey, you know, I want to invite so-and-so to this event, and is that okay with you? To my AR counterpart, for example, if there's somebody that kind of falls into both categories and vice versa. So that's never been an issue. It's not a problem. But there's definitely a increasing, as I alluded to earlier, blurring of the lines. How do you define that gray area? Who owns whom? You know, is it just a kind of a legacy relationship that you hold on to because you've always had a PR relationship with somebody? I don't know. You know, and when was the Register ever traditional media, not social media, right? Like, it was never, you know, a print publication. These are tricky and complicated questions that I can't answer.
No, it brings in the utter lack of consistent metrics, though, because I really do think it's just this tongue-in-cheek / just unspoken rule that says, no, I mean, they seem pretty big. They're going to be PR or influencers in the AR world. And I think it's BS. That's why I'm on a campaign to get clearer definitions so that we can all play in... What's it that Amy always says? Good fences make good neighbors.
Yes.
Well, the ones we're talking about here, they usually have day jobs, right? And so their time is constrained and their interests are constrained. So that's an interesting difference between the two camps, right? The reporter is there and the analyst there to get information to write, and that's kind of their day job. But a lot of times we fly folks in, if we do fly folks in, or folks come to VMworld or whatever, you know, they're taking time out of their day jobs and they have a limited time for briefings. And like I said, we've done these 10-hour briefings that have, you know, last spaced out over days or weeks. But that's a pretty serious time commitment to ask somebody to drop their day job and, you know, listen to the new features that are coming out. So maybe that's one way. I don't know if that helps us in deciding who's in what camp, but it definitely, as you approach them and work with them, you know, you have to be respectful that they do have day jobs. And in fact, you know, what they write sometimes can influence their day jobs for better or worse. In other words, yeah. People get, sometimes their bosses get called.
Well, and
no,
that difference. That's just Matt. Talk about the difference between that idea of I'm just here to make a deadline to hit a story, and I'm here as part of my career path and educational. It really does speak to motivation. And I'm always awed by, again, the idea, you know, people taking PTO to come really just personal and professional development. It's a pretty impressive community to get to work with.
It only enriches the content out there to have that variety, right? I mean, it's good to have folks who are invited into the circle to cover and write about whatever the topic is from a perspective that's different from the press, whose motives are, you know, to sell stories, which, you know, that's one decent motivation, but it's different from, you know, from what a typical blogger is motivated to be there for. So I think it's I think it's only good to have that variety of perspectives and that variety of motivations at the table, getting that content and deciding what to do with it and how to regurgitate it.
Well, in that vein, since the Geek Whisperer confessional is open, do you have PR in your past, Sarah?
No.
How did you get here? How did you train and learn and get to this place you are to
I just made it up as I went along, Amy. I have no PR experience at all. My background is all content strategy, social media, consulting. But I mean, even that I made up, as anybody else who works in social media did. We all made it up.
This is the whispering part.
We're all just brilliant bullshit artists, right?
Ain't that
there, I said one swear.
We just went to PG-13 now.
No, I just I'm just very observant. That's my best skill.
Well, I frankly think that everybody I know in social media is very multi-talented and unafraid to try things. At least all the people I've seen that are successful in it.
Yeah, I don't know about everybody.
Well, the people who are good. I don't know. People who stay around. Well, Sarah, and what has been what's your relationship? So you didn't actually answer the question. What did you get here from, a marketing path or a different path? I did not stalk you on LinkedIn or anything, so I actually don't even know.
I have a weird and complicated background, which includes.
Oh, dude, I'm a scientist, and Amy is a publisher, and Matt is done a bunch of. He was a tech support dude, so. Yeah.
I've done social media strategy for small businesses with my, just hung out my own shingle and did that. Overall content strategy for people who are setting up websites. I studied a variety of things in a college that allowed me to have just a general liberal arts degree. So I don't have a major, but I did a lot of writing in school. And so that is a strength of mine, and I kind of pull that forward into the work that I did. I worked in healthcare. I did transcription. I ran a startup for a while that was a social media for social good startup that failed, but I learned a lot from it. And I also did some tech writing on the side. I kind of fell into technical writing because I was able to handle it, and did a lot of tech writing, mostly on the software side. And it was as a tech writer that I came to Dell, not as a social media person. And after about 3 months in my role as a tech writer, when a social media job came up on my team, I just kind of sneakily moved over into that role because 'cause tech writing was boring, and because social media was something that I knew how to do.
It sounds like a perfectly normal social media career path, frankly.
But yeah, I have a weird and complicated and varied past.
Those are the best kind. Hey, Amy, I don't want to hijack. I don't even know what our topic is today, but I'm just so fascinated by other people's jobs. I want to ask another question, Sarah, which is, how do you feel about the L word, lead generation?
Oh, I'm gonna pop some popcorn.
I happily get to ignore it.
Wow. Okay.
Ow. Why do they pay you? Teach us how.
Well, on your channels, do you amongst your things that you're storytelling, and you talked about the executive news and product launch news and things like that.
It is not in my mandate.
Do you slip in a little lead gen every now and then?
It's not in my mandate to generate leads. I do link to product pages here and there. That's as close to lead gen as I get. But I'm not measured on that. There are no expectations for me around that. I'm focused solely on awareness building and community building and communication strategy. And lead gen is left to another team entirely. And I am grateful for that.
But does the other team, can they use your channels? Do you let them use your channels, or do they have to figure out their own channels?
I have a lead gen team, but it's not my... It's just not my mandate. Sure. It's not my focus, and I'm happy for that. I'm not a marketer. I'm a communications strategist.
I like that, but I will say, my belief is that lead gen is not evil. And I've used the metaphor of being like a park ranger on this podcast, which is that, you know, our job is to kind of protect these communities and protect these channels. On the other hand, the people that subscribe to them are actually interested in your product. So, you know, offering them a webinar or an ebook or something is if they're interested, there's no reason not to. If you do it too much, you screw the whole thing up, though. That's my
we're a company.
To find that balance.
We build products and we need to sell those products to people in order for us to continue as a company. And I'm way on board with that.
You're down with that. Okay.
We have lots of great shiny boxes and we need people to know about them and click on their links and buy them. And we have a whole team of people that's focused on making sure that that happens. And we have a lot of channels to make sure that that happens. And I'm not separate from that in the sense that I don't care or that I'm not charged with making sure that it happens.
Well,
but yeah,
Matt's not a marketer either. So,
oh, I've actually changed my mind. I'm just a self-loathing marketer.
Oh, oh my!
We have different stages here.
Yeah, that with a computer science degree, and happens. To the best of us. If John can have a PhD that he doesn't use day to day, I can be a computer scientist / self-loathing marketer.
Our cards just all got a little bit bigger. So I always like to end with the slightly positive negative question, which is, do you have any cautionary tales for us? If anybody else has a question, jump in here too. But I always like to hear sort of your lessons learned so I can go out and make new mistakes. So Sarah, in doing this, in aligning these briefings very much along the lines of a press briefing, what would you tell us never to do again? Or
That's an awesome question. And for me, this is a life lesson even more than a job lesson, but I think it applies. And that is that I'm slowly learning, and I'm not 100% there yet, but I think I'm like 85, never to pretend to know anything that I don't know. Never to act as if, never to nod along. And this is both with technical stuff and really anything. I am 46 years old and I'm still trying to get there, but I'm getting better at asking questions and not pretending to understand everything just because I'm afraid of being singled out and looking stupid.
That is a good life lesson.
That is a good lesson.
Well, hey, so Sarah, do you have any advice for people? I mean, this has turned into a kind of a social media, how the sausage is made podcast. Any advice for people coming up in your careers? You just gave up your age. I'm still your elder, but we are in the same decade. Sometimes, you get people think that, community managers or social media managers are these little college kids and they need to enter the field, I suppose. I don't know. You have any advice for people getting into the field, either coming from college or maybe coming over from the technical side who want to do this?
I mean, I think what we do is so interesting, and that's why I was so excited to be on the show, is because I feel like when people talk about social media and social media management and social media marketing, there's a heavy, heavy focus on consumer. And consumer is great, and consumer is fun. It's really shiny, and they have great ad campaigns, and everybody loves the Old Spice guy, but that's not what we do. And I think there is a tendency to overlook or misunderstand this also very deep and important work that goes on kind of behind the scenes, I guess, in a way, from consumer. And that is like enterprise-focused social media and other areas that aren't as shiny, that aren't as focused on kind of advertising dollars and revenue. I think I would say, I don't know, I hate advice, but I would say that, that there's what social media is really about is communications and about community building. So you have to be passionate about people and communications and community building. And social media is just the stuff that you use to make that happen. It's not, it doesn't matter anymore as a tool.
I'm waving my arms in the air and yelling.
Yeah. I was going to say a big amen.
Snuffleupagus.
Snuffleupagus.
So, you know, I got here because I was an early online community member and geek, and this is maybe answering your question more than it did the first time, but like I was on IRC channels and I was, you know, doing that stuff as a kid, and it was because I was seeking out people like me and trying to connect. And if that's your passion, then you're in the right place. If your passion is, you know, Facebook, then you need to re-examine
your life priorities.
Yes. Maybe go to cooking school. I don't know.
Or at least your skill set, for God's sakes.
Oh, good times. So, Sarah, where can people learn more of these fabulous bits of wisdom? Where can they stalk you online?
God. So the best place is Twitter, and I'm Orchid8 on Twitter. Orchid like the flower and 8 like the number.
Awesome. And of course, Speaking in Tech, published weekly.
SpeakingInTech.com or Speaking in Tech on Twitter. Never heard of it. I know.
Never heard of it. No.
Well, we really appreciate you taking some time out and talking with us today. It is always fabulous to talk to a fellow practitioner and really drill down in what you do and how you do it. So some great wisdom here.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It was a lot of fun, and I love the show, so it was a real thrill to be on.
And for everybody out there in listener land, if you want to hear more of this, then how about giving us some love? Give us a like, a star, a thumbs up, tell a neighbor, play it on your boombox like you're in Say Anything. But don't keep it to yourself. Until next time, these are the Geek Whisperers signing out.
You've been listening to the Geek Whisperers podcast, where we bring social media and community to enterprise IT. You can listen to all the episodes at our website, geek-whisperers.com, or check us out on Twitter, Facebook, or iTunes. Your hosts were John Mark Troyer, Amy Lewis, and Matthew Brender, better known on Twitter as J. Troyer, Comms Ninja, and MJ Brender. See you next week.
Okay. Are we singing tonight? Is that what we're doing? Slip sing. This is The Voice.
Yeah. Sing along.
I was going to sing Sarah, Sarah. I'm sure it's not the first time she's heard it, just the worst version she's ever heard.
I don't even recognize the song.
That's probably a good sign.
I meant it when I said, like, I'm trying to think of some ways to talk about this that aren't just, is social media dead? Because I think that question is a little dead, but I don't exactly know how to approach it other than to just be like, oh my God, I'm on your show and you're talking about the thing that I do for a living. And that's so exciting.